All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Blind Side Blitz. I am Jimmy McPhee, and of course, alongside of me is Mr. Joe DiCapita.
What's going on, Blitz Nation? Welcome back again. You know what it's all about, your football dosage for the week. We bring it right here at Blind Side Blitz. So we are brought to you by grumblingsmedia.com. Head over to their website, check out all the greatest political, entertainment, and sports podcasts. They have it available. And you can also check them out at rumble.com. Make sure you drop a follow for us, of course. We would love you to, Blindside Blitz. And head over to YouTube. Make sure you hit that subscribe button, hit the like button, share it to all your friends and family members. And then you can take us on the go. Anywhere you get your podcast, Apple, Google, Spotify, and Pandora, and more, make sure you take us with you as well. My God, Jim, I'm excited today because I got to tell you, we have a special guest on our show.
Yes, we do.
A fantasy football aficionado,
I like the way you bring it right in there. That's right, aficionado, fantasy football vet, professional, better. This guy does it all, and he is the co-founder of the Sports Affiliation. It is Mr. Iggy Gilbert. Iggy, pleasure having you with us tonight.
Iggy? Hey, what's up, guys? Like a shot of energy over there. I feel like I'm out of a talent concert. Love the open. Pleasure to be here.
I know, we just need the smoke effects in the tunnel, you know, that's where you get crazy out here, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, just get the pads on after that. Be ready.
Awesome, man. So it's a pleasure having you out here. We're going to talk some fantasy, maybe some betting a little bit too. But you just came back from like the fantasy fantasy sports expo. Huh? What was that like?
Yeah, fantasy football expo. Third year, man. I love it. You get to go to the Hall of Fame. You know, you get to be surrounded in the greatness that is the NFL. You know, I have a deep appreciation for the history. I do a live draft in what they call the King's Classic there with IDP, defensive players, and then, you know, get to be on the panel. Just get to see some of the best, man, and hang out and have a good time and find out the Matrix is indeed not real, that these people are real, and that you get to hang out and have those moments. I wouldn't change it for anything, man. I really look forward to going to it every year.
Yeah, it's great because, I mean, it was funny, too, how big fantasy football has gotten. I mean, we end up having a conversation with one of the guys that even, you know, discovered it, you know what I mean? Just fantasy football right from the beginning, like 20, 30 years ago, and how big it got and how so many people, like in the industry then, kind of laughed you off the stage, you know, and how this was and how big it is now. They're accepting of it now and even sports betting on top of it as well. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's getting accepted. We were fortunate enough to have, I'm blanking on his name. Larry is his first name, but I'm blanking on his last name. And he wrote the history of fantasy football. I got a ring over
Larry
there.
Larry Schechter. We had him on. Yep.
Larry Schechter, man. Way to go. And, he wrote the book. He writes about Greg, who I produced a show for. And he's in the inaugural Fantasy Sports Writers Association with Matthew Berry and those guys. So I get a dose of history every time I go in there, and I love it. Shout out to Winkenbach, the guy that started fantasy football back in Oakland when they were the Oakland Raiders. We're not getting fined because we said when they were, you know. I really appreciate fantasy football. I've been playing 15 years. I've been legally sports betting as soon as I can. You know, you go up in the house and you don't realize what these papers are and why these numbers on the ends of games are so important. You get a little older, you find out why. So, it's been indoctrinated with me in a long time. So, and I love both. And, you know, as long as you're keeping it healthy, you're not putting yourself in a bad situation, you're keeping it as a hobby or maybe a small way to get money, you're doing what you're supposed to with it.
Yeah, you love fantasy football, and I understand that you're also a Packers fan. How do you feel about this season? Like, do you think like the Packers have what they need to go ahead and push deeper into the playoffs and win?
Yeah, man. You know, I've got my little Packers booth corner over there when things get set up. Vince always looking over me, making sure we're making the right calls. But I do feel like, I feel like they're going to improve. They got McKinney on the secondary, one of the best safeties in the league. That's going to drastically improve that defense. New coordinator, give it some time to take effect over there on the defensive side of the ball. And then, you know, Josh Jacobs, say what you want about him. I still think he's got some tread on there. There's three good backs back there in the backfield to help Jordan Love. Jordan Love had better statistics than Dak Prescott. Have better statistics than several top leading quarterbacks, yet he's still being, you know, I wouldn't say denied, but slept on, if you will.
And like overlooked, right?
Yeah. He still, you know, maybe it's just because he's like kind of a humble guy, not a very boastful guy, but you know, I believe in everything they have over there. The NFC is still wide open, especially if CMC goes down. I hope he does, you know, for the pure sake of football, you know, but I mean, even if Trent Williams doesn't come back, man, they got a problem over there. But San Francisco has been the class of the conference, but I feel like there's a small opening over there. So yeah,
there's a crack there, the armor.
Yeah, it's been amazing what the Packers have done out there. And Jordan Love, like you said, one thing you did notice about him last year is of what I noticed is really the calm, collect poise that he had. You know what I mean? You didn't get to see a whole lot because he's kind of been on the shelf for so long, you know. Just finally you open him up now and you unbox him and here it is. And I was really intrigued about it. And he did a really well job. And hopefully now with that contract now, there's going to be a lot of pressure for him to be that same guy.
Yeah, dude, he's got to deliver. You know, being born in the 80s, I've only watched three quarterbacks my entire life. So shout out to Matt Flynn. I did see him live.
Nice.
Him, but, you know, Jordan Love, anything less than a Lombardi at this point is going to be a disappointment. So.
Right, right. Yeah, and you moved on from Aaron Jones, and then you inserted Josh Jacobs, and you brought back A.J. Dillon. You got to be excited about those two backs being behind in the backfield.
Yeah, young offensive line should be good. You know, I feel like the Packers are telling you, you know, Coach LaFleur is saying, hey, we want to run the ball. We want to set up the play action. We truly want to play the run to set up the pass. And they brought in Josh Jacobs on a, you know, pretty short-term contract to be able to come through there and just get a lot of use out of him, get to the title game. You know, like I said, anything else is a little bit of a disappointment. LaFleur's been close. He's had plenty of opportunity right at the doorstep. You know, these things have levels to them, and that next level is getting to the Super Bowl.
Right, right. And we'll have to wait to see if that happens, you know. Let's get back to fantasy real quick. So we've kind of asked this to a lot of people. We've asked, tried to get their opinions, some differ than others, and just curious, like, in your opinion, should a league, no matter what, you know, format they use, draft be earlier or closer to the season?
Yeah, I'm going to have the 12th year of my home league going. They took a couple years off. It's always the night before the kickoff. So Wednesday, you draft. If you're smart, you draft a player that's playing in the Thursday game so that when you wake up, you're cheering on points, you know. So I think that's the best. I realize people can't do that. I lean to later, but I don't really think there's a wrong time. I run one of the largest charity leagues in the world with Fantasy Football Sevens, and with IDPs, that is. There's 112 people. We started, it's a slow draft. We started, you know, right after July 4th. Generally, takes about 3 weeks to get it done, and you're finished. You can make moves. That's my only thing. If you make the draft early, just make it where there's moves. Don't let somebody accumulate three or four of these injuries that we're seeing in the preseason and penalize them for that. Allow them to kind of gear up their roster before the start of the season so that they don't have to burn through all their fab, or they don't have to burn through all their priority in the waiver just to go get guys. So that's my argument if you do start earlier.
Gotcha. Yeah, and it makes sense. Like me and Jimmy have talked about this before. We've talked to friends of ours and people that we know. Some of them say that they start their league in like July. I'm like, why? Half your team could be injured before.
They like to take chances. Again, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. You know.
Can't wait, man. It's like, you know, jumping the gun or something. Man.
You just mentioned IDPs, and we know from like researching you and studying, you know, learning about you leading up to this show that you're a big IDP guy. So if you didn't have to choose IDP, what would you prefer the style of format would be for fantasy football? Would you prefer standard, PPR, dynasty?
Yeah, you know, blindside blitzing, baby. I do love the IDP. You know, gotta have those my favorite plays in football. That's part of the reason the video got me so hyped. But I do like PPR. I do like super flex leagues. Okay. What that is where you have the option to start two quarterbacks. You don't have to. But I do enjoy the super flex. I play like at a half point PPR because I still love the running back so much. You know, I don't want to devalue that position that's already being devalued in our time. You know, we went from Barry Sanders and Walter Payton and Emmitt Smith to guys that share the backfield. So I do everything I can to restore that position. So my final answer to this is super flex, redraft, half point PPR.
Nice. And it's funny because I used to run a league and I did it only for 1 year because it was a lot as a GM to take on. You drafted your whole team. And I mean offense, defense, punter, kicker. Yeah. I did it for 1 year, and it was a lot on me, like trying to organize
the draft that I was part of, Joe. I mean, that was a long draft too. I mean, how do you deal with like what do you guys do as like a party, like a big thing to do this whole thing? Because it took a long time.
You know, I'm so my first year playing commission or playing, I was convinced by my neighbor at that time. I told him like no 2 or 3 times, and he's like, "No, come on, man, you're gonna love it. You love football way too much not to be playing fantasy football." And I was like, "Okay." Yeah. And then, you know, hook. And then after 1 year, I was like, "Mark, you suck as a commissioner. I'm gonna go do this and handle this the right way." So I've been playing with defensive players for so long, it's hard for me to know what a short draft is. And the one I just completed had 34 picks. We did it live. We took a couple breaks. You know, we did that one in the Hall of Fame. But you know. Wow. It takes some time. I just research. I mean, I just love defense so much. I like the big hits. You know, what's there not to like about somebody getting smashed in the back? You know, pick sixes. We all love those things. So I just kind of accept the fact that the draft's going to be a little longer. But if you're doing something live, you know, make sure you get some breaks in there. And, you know, kickers, defenses, I think they all have a spot. I've lost and won games on the last kick of Monday Night Football. So you never forget those. I just think it's an exciting element to the game. Ultimately, though, I just try to be a fusser, not a fixer. You know, if we got whatever we got to – or wait, a fixer, not a fusser. I said that. And, so whatever we got to do to make sure that that works and that happens, that's ultimately my goal.
Yeah. I know you don't want to spill out your secrets here for IDP especially, but, like, do you go into an IDP draft at any point in time and you, like, you already have, like – your top, like I would say, like maybe top 3 or 4 or whatever, that guys that you just have to have every year.
Yeah, I mean, it depends, man. And the scoring settings that I participate in Fantasy Football Sevens and the Kings, defenders go in the first and second round. So you have no idea. I picked 4th in a 14 team, you know, this weekend. By the time I got back around in the second round, 5 IDPs guys were off. So I had to go get a for sure player, Alex Singleton. But man, I have a tiered ranking, and I have to get a number one, at least 3 or 4 number ones within those tiers on the defensive players, you know, defensive lineman, linebacker, defensive backs. But, you know, it's always important to know the scoring system, you know, just like the offensive system of the ball. You have to know it. And then from there, you can kind of set your base on like, man, this league gives out 10 points for every sack, plus the tackle for loss, plus the quarterback hit. You know, so you got Max Crosby, T.J. Watt, Nick Bosa. You have these guys that are just going to have absolute value. And then, you know, it could be like, man, they're giving out 2 points for every tackle. Boise State, Alakun, we got to go get him. We got to get Singleton. We got to go get somebody that's getting 140 or 50 tackles, or we're going to get burnt by that team. So, you know, there's different ways to it, but I love having at least one high tackle. Give me that higher floor with somebody that's going to get me the equivalent of a wide receiver getting, you know, 8 catches and, you know, 80, 90 yards. Weeks touchdowns. So that's kind of what I
think. Speaking about, you know, top tier players, what would your top 3 breakout fantasy football players be?
Yeah, and I went all offensive with this. I got a little bit of notes from here. One guy I absolutely love is Khalil Shakir. He's coming out in year 3, man. One thing I learned from Greg, the Hall of Famer I work with, is wide receivers break out in their 2nd or 3rd year, generally, if they're going to break out. Well, guess what? He's in his 3rd year. And guess who's gone? Stephon Diggs. So that's like, 150-something targets, I believe, that are now going to have to be filled by either a rookie, Keon Coleman, or a tight end that gets hurt, or, you know, Curtis Samuel, I believe, was there. You know, Claypool just got out for the season. So they're already reeling there in Buffalo, and they're going to have to fill that void. You got a player that knows the playbook, a player that knows Josh Allen, knows what he likes, had numbers improve in the second half of the season, even with Stephon Diggs there. Buffalo knew what they were doing. Hey, they're like, we'll get rid of Diggs. We have this young star and Khalil. We have Dalton Kincaid. So I love Shakir. I think he's a very sneaky pick to have potential top wide receiver one numbers, believe it or not, with Josh Allen. I mean, he's not going to run it all the time. He's got to throw it. And then Jaleel McLaughlin, running back out of Denver. People may not know him. People probably are higher on Javonte Williams. They got that kid out of Notre Dame, Etienne, I believe is how you pronounce that. They don't look near as Chris. Coach Payton has just been talking this guy up left and right. And I think he's going to get a lot of opportunities on Denver. Probably going to get the ball a lot handed to him due to the situation with Bo Nix. And then Romeo Doubs as well. He's still going right around 100 in most leagues that I'm doing, being a best ball fanatic that I am. He's right around 100 right now. He's gone up. He was like at 108, but you can see that he's gone back up. And I think he stays on every set. You know, personnel 12 sets. He's still out there as the wide receiver for them. Jordan Love has expressed multiple times that he thinks he's fantastic, that he's able to trust him in situations, go deep to him in situations, and not have to worry in any way, shape, or form about it. So he's just somebody I think is really worth a look, because, you know, because you're getting him essentially wide receiver 4, you know, wide receiver 3 if you're winning even. So love that guy. I think there's potential for about 1,000 yards.
Nice. That's great information. That's great. Hey, Nation, if you're paying attention, take notes. This guy is, you know, he's professional at this. He knows what he's doing, knows what he's talking about. Iggy, it's awesome to hear what you have to say about everybody. And going back to, like, Jaleel McLaughlin, it's funny because I had him last year. I drafted him late last year in hopes of – and he had a couple games that I was like, oh, my God, this could be it. He could have popped off. But he ended up going back to his rotational ways, and it didn't really pan off for me at the end of the year. But you're saying that maybe, you know, because of everything going on with Sean Payton talking him up and maybe he's getting more reps, that he could be kind of like that breakout guy.
Absolutely, he can be that breakout guy. I live in Colorado, so I get more regional news, if you will. And he's just getting the snap counts and practices. He's getting in there. He's getting the reps. They're not taking him out in third down situations as they were. Samaje Perine is still such a great third down running back. He can pick up this. He can pick up a yard or two if you need that situation. But he's just a really smart, high IQ running back. And I think Jaleel's still trying to get there to that level. That takes years of experience, of course. Mm-hmm. But I think he's going to be the guy there. I think he ends up this year as the Broncos' leading running back.
Excellent. Excellent. We talked about three breakout players. Now, let's do three players that may have struggled last year or missed a significant time. And do you see them having like a turnaround year, breaking, coming back in 2024?
Yeah. I didn't know if the first guy qualified, but I'm super high on him. And I think
we're going to qualify it.
Okay.
Go for it.
Bijan Robinson. Here we go. And, you know, and I think he just was drafted at such lofty expectations. You know, I played Dynasty too. Maybe that's part of it as well. A lot of the Dynasty crowd was so ready for this running back kind of savior, if you will, to come in and kind of be the guy. And I think people were let down by him, but I think he's going to have an excellent year. You know, they've come out and said, Tyler Allgeier, we got big plans for him. I think that was just kind of franchise talk and coach talk. I think Bijan Robinson is going to get about 85%, maybe 90% of the reps even at running back with a good quarterback that they'll have to respect that can't just load the box against him. So I think Bijan's due for an RB1 season. I've been drafting not number one pick, top five, lately a lot. Next up, Marvin Mims. He caught the touchdown in the preseason from Bo Nix. He is Sean Payton's guy. Their very first draft pick, because they gave up their first round pick for Russell Wilson, who's no longer with the team. How about that? And that was their first draft pick that they took, and he's going to be excellent on the field. He's everything that Sean Payton loves as a gadget guy. It's a guy that can move around. It's almost like a Darren Sproles role. Think of it like that, but with a better route running tree. So he's going to have a fantastic year. Bo Nix has already proven that he's trusting him. He's going to be his underneath guy. If you're in a PPR league, go get Mims right now. And especially if you're in a kickoff return league, he was in the top 10 on my draft kick. You're going to get all these yards from this crazy kickoff thing happening. So go get Marvin Mims. Just trust me if you get all those points. And then I kind of had two more that I couldn't get rid of. I gave you four. Will Levis, I think he's due for a great year with everything that they've put around him. Their defense might not be that great, so he may have to score a lot of offense to keep them within games. I think there's a lot of potential there. You can get him practically at the end of every draft. And then I think Russell Wilson's due for a good year. I really do.
Okay.
I know he's old. I know he's out of shape. You know, he doesn't have quite the deep ball he used to. And he doesn't really have he doesn't quite have he doesn't have the best wide receiver room, but they're not bad. And Pat Freiermuth is pretty good. But he's got the best coach he's had in quite some time. Mike Tomlin, never a losing record, joins a team that's got probably the best defense he's had since the Super Bowl at team. And I just think there's potential for him to get in there, score touchdowns. They'll use Najee down there, and then they'll use Wilson to throw a touchdown. I mean, he had some good – once they told him, you lose one more game, you lose your job. He won like four games in a row. So I think he's going to do that.
Right, that tends to motivate people, I guess, right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, everybody was criticizing Russell Wilson as a Denver Bronco quarterback, but he had a really good year. It's just like the stigma about him from whether it be journalists or reporters or whatever in Denver or outside of Denver, they were all making the viewers or the outside fans believe that, like, oh, he's the problem. This is why we're struggling. Mm-hmm. And then he goes to Pittsburgh. Now, I agree with you, Iggy. Like, I think Russell Wilson could be a very sneaky quarterback that you could even take later because of all that stigma around him. Like, I know I've gone to drafts before where I talk about a guy who had, like, a bad stigma about him the past season. And then we're talking, you know how you're in a live draft, you bullshit, and, you know, you bounce things off of each other and joke about it. But everybody was like, oh, I'm not touching him. Like, no, I don't want him. No, not in Denver. I don't want him. And I'm just like, all right. But you see that all the time, and it's all fun and games. You play with people's minds that way, too. I'm sure you do it in any of your drafts. You know, like, hey, I heard this guy's going to start.
Yeah, whatever. I had a guy tell me right next to me in that draft this week. He's like, I'm going to go heavy offense. I was let down. He drafted 5 defensive players first. So, yeah.
Never trust
the
DMs. After free agency now and the draft that transpired, what moves most surprised you and what impact do you think it will have an effect on fantasy football this year?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. There's a couple moves, to be honest with you, from coordinators to new head coaches. Right. But I thought Atlanta would go get a quarterback in the draft because they had a good draft stock. And they did. They went and got Michael.
They did.
I think Kirk Cousins is going to be a great move. Okay. He doesn't need as much lateral movement as other quarterbacks. He's proven that he's one of the most accurate quarterbacks of the past decade. And we've been waiting. At first it was Kyle Pitts. Yeah, Kyle Pitts is going to be the next big thing. And then it was Drake London. Drake London is going to be the best wide receiver. And then it was Bijan Robinson. Oh, Bijan's going to be. Well, now all those things can happen because they have a quarterback that can deliver to the wide receiver that has a proven record of delivering to multiple tight ends. And they have the running back to do it. He can push people back. He'll be able to put the passes on to London, to Pitts, to Mooney, and Bijan. So I think it's going to be a great move. He's still being drafted kind of late. If you're in a six points per passing touchdown, I still think he has great worth. But all those other guys, Drake London and Bijan are top 12 guys. It's hard to get them out of the first round. All right. Kyle Pitts is back into being a third round guy after basically breaking everybody in Dynasty's heart, with his lack of deliverance after, you know, what was a promising first year. So give me Kirk Cousins. I think that's going to have a huge, massive impact in what is a weak division. I believe covering the NFC South later today or what have you. And I think there's a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah. Do you think that Kirk Cousins, do you think that you could maybe get him a little later than expected? Like maybe middle rounds or something like that?
Yeah, he's going later than he has in the past couple of years. So, and a 4.4 point per passing, you know, he's not going to get you very many scrambling yards. But if you're getting the full 6 per touchdown, and then John Madden once said, gosh darn it, a touchdown's a touchdown. go get him.
Nice, nice. If you had to draft one of the rookie quarterbacks, speaking of quarterbacks, which one do you think has better fantasy upside?
I thought pretty hard about this. This is a pretty tough question, honestly. I'm tilting Daniels. I wrote down Caleb Williams, actually. But the more I think about it, I'm thinking about Daniels. Caleb Williams has all the resources you could ask for around you. And he has a great coaching staff. He's playing with a pretty decent defense. But I think Daniels is going to have more rushing yards. I think he'll have more rushing touchdowns. And he still has some pretty great options around him with Terry McLaurin. Terry McLaurin's a true one, wide receiver one, you know, and Dotson could bounce back. I think Zach Ertz is a very, very, very sneaky tight end. I mean, after, Cliff Kingsbury, after he got back from his trip from Thailand, he decided he needed to go coach again some more. He's over there in Washington. He's going to be running a college-style offense. Talked Zach Ertz out of retirement even. Zach Ertz was playing without Cliff Kingsbury for a half a year. He said, nah, I'm good. And then Kingsbury comes back. He says, come on, Zach, one more year. Let's just go get the stats. You know what to do. You know all the hot calls. And I think Zach Ertz is, you know, what's a rookie quarterback's best friend? A tight end. That's why Zach Ertz is there. Like, I know everybody called him Sinet, but I think there's enough weapons around Daniels where he doesn't have to do it all with his legs, but he's going to have more rushing yards, more rushing touchdowns.
Nice, nice. Mm-hmm. That leads us into, with all the hype that around new additions and newly drafted players that all 32 teams have done, are there any players that GMs should stay away from or perhaps wait on until they can draft to them later?
Man, Dak Prescott might be in a bad situation right now. If CeeDee Lamb holds out even 3 or 4 games, I mean, that is like 14 targets a game almost or something ridiculous like that. He's back to having Ezekiel Elliott. That's going to be it. Brandon Cooks, he's getting old. He's still good. But there's the potential for him to have, an MVP caliber leading the NFL in certain statistics season. Right. To a potential pretty big drop-off, and that drop-off will be pretty severe for his production. So I'm just watching Dak Prescott. Plus, he has a history of being injured, you got to kind of – they want to keep the quarterbacks upright in, today's game. They don't want the blindside blitzes that we love.
That's right.
They're going to keep them protected. But so I'm watching out for Dak. And plus, the Eagles got a good secondary. New York's gotten better, and we've already talked about Washington. I think they're going to be – I mean, heck, they're playing their former defensive coordinator. He's going to know them really well.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point, too. A lot of people I feel like a lot of people on average, like your average fantasy football GM, is going out there, and they're looking at Dak from last year, and they're like, man, put up numbers. I got to get him. I got to take him. Like, whatever they're thinking about taking him in the top half of the draft and top 10 rounds, whatever – I kind of agree now that you've mentioned that little bit of information about Dak Prescott about how he might have a down year. He just might, simply because we're all still waiting on the Cowboys to get a deal done with not only CeeDee Lamb, but now Dak's up at unhappy, and they got to still get that deal done, and then you still got future deals that you got to worry about. So it's a very very fluid and difficult situation for the Cowboys right now, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that window's kind of closing in on them pretty tight. And, they got Micah Parsons as well that they got to pay.
Yep, so. Yep. Deron Bland, you think about him, who was, shut down last year, shut everybody down. He's going to get paid.
I got a quick question here, see, we're talking about some defensive players and then potential holdouts during the offseason. Does that come into play at all when you go to try and draft some of these guys? If they're going to hold it out, or you think, yes, eventually they're going to come back when the season starts, but does that maybe make some guys fall down the draft board?
Absolutely. CeeDee Lamb is falling fast right now. He was the guaranteed 2. He's moving to 4 quickly. And then CMC, Trent Williams, people are starting to get leery about that. Brandon Ayuk is falling. He was way above Debo Samuel. Now Debo Samuel has moved almost 2 picks ahead of him in the ADP. That's the average draft position, in case anybody knew watching. And, it is. It's just like the stock market. When you do as many best balls as I do, and you see the movement of the line, we're seeing Puka Nacua get pushed way back. He's gotten pushed back almost to the mid-second round. And I think that's where he belonged to be to begin with. But, it's like you're seeing this move and fall on the lines because more and more people are starting to come in as we kind of are in draft month right now.
Right, right. I got one more thing for you, Iggy. One more.
All right.
From one fantasy guy to another, let's just call this the lightning round. This is what we're going to do, where we're going to spit off your answers
crazy,
right here.
Like jazz music here, game show music.
If you were to create the ultimate lineup for this season, what would it look like? With QB, running back, 2 wide receivers, tight end, flex, kicker, defense.
Okay, and not worried about what round they're in, just building.
Nope, just your ultimate team.
Okay, let me think here. I definitely would have I'm going to have Anthony Richardson as my quarterback. There's just so much upside there. I mean, he could have 1,500 rush yards. Okay. So Anthony Richardson, Bijan Robinson. I told you I'm super high on him. I'm going to go Breece Hall. I think there's a lot of potential for him to still be, have a great year. Jamar Chase, Tyreek Hill. Just give me the two best receivers in the NFL, in my opinion. I think that we're looking good. Then we got Ingram at tight end, very underrated. Got like 160 targets last year, and they don't have Calvin Ridley this year, so I don't know where they're expecting those to go, but I'm expecting Evan Ingram. And then Amon-Ra St. Brown in my flex. Just think he's going to be another great wide receiver. I think there's another 100 catch season. And then, of course, Justin Tucker, one of the greatest of all time to do it. And maybe a surprise, my best defense of the year is the Houston Texans. They have success at every level. So every level in a bad division.
Nice. Now, if the nation out there, if you guys could mimic that somehow and draft those players, depending on how big or how small your league is, I think you got it won.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to go to a couple of comments out here as we are live out there. We've got back to the Stone Ages with us again tonight. He says, yo, real men play IDP leagues. Who avoids the toughest men in the game? Wussies, that's who. So there you go. He's all on board. He's super, super hyped. And then we've got William Del Pilar. Oh, there he goes.
Yes.
Nice. Yes, Luchador. Indeed. There he is. I like it. So do you wear that on the draft night then too? Is that your intimidation factor?
It can be. Yeah. Honestly, we got a bunch of those. Somebody gave it to us. Mauricio Gutierrez, like the Mr. Matthew Berry of the Spanish speaking fantasy football world. He gave us a bunch of Luchadores. We all wore them down.
Nice.
That's awesome. Here, William Dan Pilar has a short story here, right here, but we're going to go through it. He has a memory he wants to share with us. He goes, and first high stakes league, I was third in somewhere along those lines, maybe top five, but it didn't matter. I only had a kicker left and watched myself drop out of the big money in the final weekend on Monday night. I can't remember where I finished as I was well over 20 years ago, but I'll never forget feeling impotent as I watched myself tumble down the scoreboard slowly, knowing what it would happen. The life of fantasy memories. That's right.
It is what it is.
I've been there.
That's why I don't do fantasy anymore. I've had so many. I tell everybody, I've been the bridesmaid so many times, but never the bride. You know, I put these great teams together. Like when we did the IDP league, I mean, I had a nasty defense. And that's the thing, too, is when you go IDP, like it was our first time doing it. Mm-hmm. And we weren't sure where to draft these defensive players. So it was kind of weird. So when people were like scared to feel it out. And once some went, there was a rush.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. And I went all D-line again in linebackers. And then I happened to find a couple good corners, too. So at the time, I had some really good talent there. I'm trying to remember some of the dudes I had, but KJ Wright and stuff like that. But it was tough. And you always like remember the failures, right? So is there any? I know you've been doing this for 13 years plus, but is there any one moment where you were kind of crushed by one of these fantasy moments?
Oh yeah, several. One that sticks out in my mind, my nemesis, you know. Like John Madden said, you do something long enough, doesn't matter what it is, it's gonna come down to you and one other person or team. And that guy's Houston Dankets for me. I've played him probably at least 50 times, but in the championship, Thursday night football, I like got way up on it. They were congratulating me, they're like, way to go. And I just said, you know, you got him and he came back and crushed me with Devin White, a linebacker. Oh. Make that right, have a touchdown, a sack, you know, the interception, of course. So just like he had a career game and came back and just absolutely beat me. So, you know, in a way I was glad it's him, you know, but it still hurts. It stings. I think about it almost every fantasy football season.
Nice. Yep. You have great victories, but you also have great defeats. Mm. And it's super competitive. It's fun. I love it. It's fun to play. I love doing it every year, and maybe someday down the road, Iggy, maybe we can link up and we'll do something.
I would be honored. I would love that.
All right. So now, also, one thing we haven't talked about is you said, legally, pro better now. So But tell us a little bit about that now, and how'd you get into that? And then also, is there a formula you find for that? You follow Vegas or Steel? I mean, I want you to give everything away, but what really got you into all this sports betting?
I've always loved sports. You know, I've always bet just with my friends, on the side or on games and via fantasy and so forth. But, you know, I've been in Colorado, which is one of the first states to do it with the apps. And so I've been betting for 4 years now on various apps and platforms. And yeah, you just find a niche. I mean, I've had a positive return, had up almost 100 units come back to me in this last NBA season, and then had well over 50 in football the last season. And I've had positive returns on both of those sports predominantly. And I track every bet of every week, part of what makes it professional. And yeah, there is a formula. You know, I encourage you to bet on your team. Just don't bet with your heart on your team. I mean, you're going to know everything your team does. You're going to know what their slot person is. You're going to know who their best sack person is. You're going to know, like, oh, man, they do really well against zone. Or, you know, oh, heck, we just lost our guard. That rushing line's too high, honestly. And, you know, you can just take advantage as long as you're willing to bet, not necessarily against your team, but on the props. I predominantly like betting on props more than straight bets. I have a much higher success rate. And for football, I think I'm one of the first people to publicize betting on tackles, because I knew Vegas just did not have the knowledge that I did yet, even with their AIs on tackles, on how games work. And I watch film. I watch all 22 film. I have done that for years. I played football for 12 years as a linebacker. So I just have like an understanding of that part of the game. And I definitely use that to my advantage. And that's my main thing, getting rid of tackle props, sack props. So their algorithm has gotten much better over the past couple of years. I still predominantly like to do that in the NFL. You know, I'll have weeks I make 20 bets, so it just depends on how I'm feeling. You know, always keep that in your bankroll. That's the first thing. Establish that bankroll. Establish your unit. You know, I usually start with 40 units, so my goal is to always get to 80. Now, once you get to 80, then you're free riding. You withdraw your 40, or you can take gradual steps to that 40, and now you get to really start making looser bets and a lot more confidence in it. And then I wrote NBA. So once I got paid to be a content writer to talk about sports betting, specifically with the NBA over at Fantasy Alarm, do want to give them a shout out. And you find an angle. Mine was usually rebounds. I'm a rebound guy. I can watch that statistic. I know the teams well. I was following the Denver Nuggets. Used to go for the Denver Sports Betting, another platform of there as well, before they were winning. So we were ahead of the bookies there as well with the Nuggets, hammered them on the championship, hammered them with Jokic. And made big, big payoffs when those two particularly were successful.
Nice. One thing I did learn, I forget who it is that said it. I think they're mainly talking about horse betting, but then also they had done other different things. And one thing that a lot of people forget when they go to bet in the beginning of the season for the Super Bowl winner, they forget division champion. They forget conference champion, things like that. To put that, why not bet all that if you're saying they're going to win the Super Bowl?
Right.
They obviously have to win the conference championship, right, too. So, I mean, that's a bet that a lot of people leave behind.
Yeah, that's called building a ladder. You could do that and with the future like you're talking about. So you would do, I think they're going to get over X wins. I think they can win their division. I think they can win their conference. And I think they can win their Super Bowl. And usually if you set that up right, as long as you win two, you're even or a little above. And then if you go on to hit, it becomes on massively successful. And you can do that with yards, points, rebounds, rushing yards, sacks, tackles. There's all kinds of ways to do it if the book offers it. And it's just fun, just stay within your means, bet on what you want to bet on, and do some research or trust somebody like me or somebody to do it for you.
Nice.
Well, awesome. Iggy, we're going to trust you from now on because you got all the inside info and you know what you're talking about. The man, the myth, the legend, that is Iggy.
Yeah, look what you did. Now you got Joe on you. Now he won't leave you alone.
Hey, Listen, all he had to say was like, I used to play linebacker for 12 years and this and the other. Now, Iggy, I got to ask you, because I play flag football. Do you still are involved in flag football or anything like that out there?
No, not right now. I do work for the Parks and Rec where I live, and they were talking about getting it going. And I said I would officiate it, if they do something like that, because I umpire. I am thinking about coaching middle school, if that's something I can think of to do. But as of right now, my sole involvement is there. But we did play flag football at the Fantasy Expo. I had my AC joint 3 weeks ago, so I didn't play this year. My heart, dude. I have to play with Des Bryant. But they talk about a hit because it's flag football, and I was the very first play of the game. Of course, I get smoked. because I'm almost 40 and I'm not fast as I think I am in my head anymore. And I get smoked, so I'm covered in pursuit and I make the ball. And I legitimately tried to jump for the ball. It just was only like 2 inches. So I completely knocked this guy out. You know, it's 200 pounds coming at you as fast as he can with no brakes. And, you know, everybody saw it because it was the first play. So I got to be as the guy knocking the hits down in flag football. So that's my
Oh, man. Oh, nice.
Awesome. All right. Excellent story. Again, co-founder of the Sports Affiliation, why don't you tell everybody about the website and where they could get some more of your content here?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and once again, thank you for having me on here. But
yeah, no problem.
Definitely at the Sports Affiliation, or if you're on X, the Sports Affiliate. We're also on Instagram, Discord. We have our YouTube at the Sports Affiliation. We're building up a newsletter right now, getting daily content up on the web. We're going to get merchandise sold there as well. And, you know, once the newsletter comes out, that's going to be our big thing every Tuesday. We have shows right now, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Monday nights. We'll have the watch along every Thursday. We have the betting show, Sup Home Slice, where we kind of use pizza as our metaphor about dough. And, you know, you get it.
Awesome.
We do that Tuesdays at 4 o'clock Eastern, and then we have a show 7 o'clock Eastern, and then we roll right into the NFL kickoff.
Nice. That's excellent. Awesome. Sounds like
love
a lot
it.
Of fun. Joe, we found some more stuff. We got to start checking out and
that's
you
right.
know, before we do our shows and stuff like that. So
that's right.
It's a heck of a lot of fun. It's been a pleasure hanging out with you. We hope to have you on during the season, and a whole lot of fun talking some more football.
Hey, fellas. It was a lot of fun for me, too. Anytime you guys want me on, please don't hesitate to ask.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thanks, brother.
All right. Iggy, there he is, man. Iggy Gilbert.
The man.
And the Sports Affiliation, man. Oh, that was a lot of fun. I had lot of fun talking fantasy football with that, Joe.
Absolutely. And the fact that you said you had fun talking fantasy football is a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
Huge.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Iggy was a lot of fun, man. He definitely dropped a lot of knowledge and had some different viewpoints on certain players for a lot of the nation that's out there and is about to draft or drafting later, like Iggy said, best way to draft is closest to kickoff.
Hey, we've been saying this for so long. It's good that we got, you know, the professionals on our side too as well, Joe, right?
We got confirmation.
Confirmation.
So,
that's right.
But yeah, thanks to Iggy. It was a great time. It was an honor actually because, another football like-minded individual that not only knows about football, but also is very good at what he does in fantasy football and everything else in terms of betting and whatnot. Like, I don't know anything about betting. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know like he knows. Like, he understands how to bet. He understands mm-hmm. that, like, he even does research on it. Like, you heard him say, mm-hmm. like, oh, you know, I've paid attention to how many rebounds a team has on average, you know, and that gives me a better shot at bets, you know, in basketball and then in football, rushing yards and this and the other thing. And he's right about that because I think I've seen a lot more people there more often they win when they bet on like rushing yards or they bet on not so much touchdowns, like a score, because mm-hmm. it's literally difficult to be like, oh, I'm going to predict this guy's going to score a touchdown. Then the guy doesn't even get close to the goal line. It's like, ah. You know, so, but yeah, it was a lot of knowledge dropped. I hope you guys tuned in. If you're just tuning in, I'm sorry, you're going to have to rewatch the show. But Iggy was a pleasure to have on the show for sure. And definitely would like to have him on the show again.
Yeah, definitely. Man, I'm exhausted. That was good. That was amazing. That was good.
It was
stuff.
A lot of good.
What
we got? We got some comments down here.
We had a few out there. Ken, I think, was laughing at Williams hurt, and then John says he says tell Iggy that if he wants fantasy football stories, skip Kellogg and come to Big John.
Oh, there you go.
So, yeah, he's got to go to Big John's show. Check it out with the biggest questions. You know, I was thinking, we get enough of these people on here and stuff like that. We can mm-hmm. maybe do how about a Grumblings Media flag football game. We have a lot of people on the on the West Coast, but mm-hmm. we have us on the East Coast. So we need to build some more guys on our East Coast team here and stuff like that because we're starting to build up a lot of guys on the West Coast there.
Yeah, I think it's time to expand the roster.
We do. We need to expand the roster and get some more East Coast guys here.
And then we'll have like a one-time event, you know, and who knows, maybe we'll do it every year or whatever, and we'll definitely we'll have it live. And yeah. we'll have a good time.
We got Big John on their side, so we'll have those guys, him and William, talk about that down the road. But I think we'd have Roderick David too. That would be great. We'll have on his side. We're gonna get a sack team, Joe. So yeah, you know, the last couple of weeks, you know, for a month and a half now,
yeah, we've been
talking
half,
about you know, the previews and stuff. We're slowly getting there. The season's starting. We got some preseason football games that have right started on. Up. So some of the videos that are out there too now, you know, have changed a bit because of some injuries that have been out there. But we got a couple more divisions left over, and tonight we're going to do the NFC South, and let's start it off with the Atlanta Falcons, Joe.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, Iggy kind of kept going
about
to Atlanta,
Falcons, right?
About how they could be a bounce-back team, could be a bounce, have a bounce-back quarterback and what have you, but yeah, they have the pieces, but before we get to the pieces, let's take a look at what their coaching staff looks like. It's a little bit different now. New head coach, Raheem Morris. You know, Zach Robinson, offensive coordinator, formerly of the Rams. So you have that Sean McVay descent off the tree limbs, you know what I mean? And he's learned from Sean McVay. He's going to implement a lot of the same core values on offense in Atlanta, but also with a little bit of a twist. I feel like Zach Robinson is going to be a little bit more creative now, the fact that he's constructed his offense that it's going to be leading up to week one. I think it's going to be interesting and fun to watch because they have the pieces, they have the weaponry. Now he gets to play with all his new toys in Atlanta. And then we'll start off real quick with the new toys.
The new toys. I like it.
You have London or Drake London. You still have him there. So yep. He's young in his prime, and that's huge for them. The interesting part is that you're going to have some guys that might not be well known in this rotation at wide receiver. Some people might not know Darnell Mooney. Now, Darnell Mooney used to play for Chicago, was kind of like the second, the number two wide receiver in Chicago. Atlanta likes what they saw, what he was able to do in Chicago. They bring him to Atlanta. I'm curious to see how they utilize him because Chicago tried to use him as like a deep threat a lot of times. And then at times tried to do like short yardage, run after the catch type plays with him. And I don't think it really worked out well for him. So maybe Atlanta's going to expand on his deep route running ability and whatnot. But Ray McCloud to me is like a very interesting wide receiver, a guy who's hasn't been a starter anywhere. From the 49ers, now looking to kind of take over that slot role. And I think this guy could develop into a very solid starter for Atlanta. Other than that, there's some names that kind of like Jakeem Grant from Cleveland. You know, he's kind of been around the deal, but he's also been heavily injured. This is like Atlanta's way of saying, hey, we'll give you a shot to come and participate and see if you can make the team. But if you get injured again, you're gone, and that's probably the end of your career. Other than that, you got a guy by the name of Hodge. His last name's Hodge. Is it Kadero? Yeah, Kadero Hodge. Mm-hmm. Was in Detroit. Didn't get a whole lot of reps, but again, what you're seeing is that they're going with some of these younger guys that are unproven, but they like their skill set and they're going to utilize them this year. So I'm curious to see how it all comes together. We already know about Drake London, but the rest of these young pups, we got to see them develop and grow before our eyes.
Right, right. And this is what they kind of needed. Drake London, you saw, you know, with the quarterback situation, that's what the really hindered these guys. We heard Iggy talk about it when it came to fantasy. Kyle Pitts, the tight end, even too. You know, first year on the board looked pretty good, and then kind of tapered down last year. Didn't look so hot. So they're all excited to have Kirk Cousins here, you know, now too.
100%.
Because, and like they said, like he said, they're going to really concentrate on this running game here too. But to have the weapons here, Darnell Mooney, I think is going to fit out here too, because at times I think they kind of bumped him up in the depth chart with the Bears and kind of nudge him to kind of be that guy. And he really did it, and that's when they went and got DJ Moore and things like that. So now that he's here with Drake London again, I think it's a nice fit for him there with the other talent that they have. And now Kyle Pitts, I think, will be able to excel in this offense too on top of it.
Yeah, and Kyle Pitts is like just like having a big wide receiver.
Right.
Like that's the difference maker or playmaker ability that he has. But he was never utilized enough in the old regime. No, Arthur Smith. Brilliant offensive mind that he is.
People love Arthur Smith in Pittsburgh.
They can love him because it's not even regular season. Like, nothing's happening right now. We don't even know, we haven't really seen his offense yet. So let's temper expectations until we get to see him somehow make miraculous calls once again. But before he can do that, we got Atlanta here with their offensive line. Very, very stout, solid offensive line play up front. You have some old heads blocking, but you also have some younger guys like Matthew Bergeron, who got drafted by Atlanta, starting at left guard. Drew Dahlman is going to be their center. Chris Lindstrom and Caleb McGarry, both guys of which last year were hurt, really didn't get to play a lot, so their protection kind of fell apart. But now these guys are healthy and they're ready to go, so we hope that for the Falcons' sake that they have a very healthy offensive line this year because they have Kirk Cousins that they need to protect and allow him time to pick apart defenses. And then the quarterback behind him, though, to me is the biggest question. In the draft, Atlanta picks seventh overall. A lot of people expect – Atlanta fans alike, too. Like, my brother's a Falcons fan. And you know that, Jim.
Yes.
But, like, I was asking him, like, what do you think you guys need in the draft? He's like, dude, pass rusher. Like, we need pass rusher. It seems like Atlanta, every time they draft in the first round, they miss on their – they draft a pass rusher, but he never ends up being the guy. You know, never ends up being the answer to their prayers. And he's like, we got to do it again. We have to draft pass rusher. And they went quarterback. After just securing Kirk Cousins as a – with a 3-year deal to lock him up as their franchise quarterback. And then on top of it, you're like, well, I don't think we should use the pick for a position of need or a position that we would like to have. I think we should use it for a backup quarterback. Michael Penix Jr. gets drafted. And this guy was highly touted. There's a lot of people that absolutely loved his traits. Is more of a pocket passer than a mobile guy, but has the ability to be mobile. But Atlanta, I'm a little confused. I think the owner was even pissed in the war room. Like, you saw videos of him trying to explain himself. Terry Fontenot, the GM there, trying to explain why they drafted Michael Penix. But here's the thing. Penix is older than normal, what you get out of the draft. He's already 25, 26 years old. When Kirk Cousins, if he goes through his 3 years in Atlanta and then retires, you're looking at a guy that's going to be 28, 29 years old and now getting a shot to start in the NFL. So the explanation from Terry Fontenot to the public anyway was like, well, we didn't want to be caught in purgatory in that position. I'm sorry, come again? Like, you drafted a quarterback because you're afraid of not having a quarterback 3 years later. So, I mean, I don't know. I didn't quite understand it. And they still could have drafted next year to have a replacement with it. But the draft now with a team that is slowly gaining traction, becoming on the rise in that division in the South, that why not add to your arsenal? Why not add to a position of need or a position of that you can grow? So that was really confusing to me. I didn't understand it at all.
Right. Because even, too, if you're worried that Kirk Cousins is going to go down by injury or something like that, Taylor Heinicke is right there in the back, too, to fill those needs right there, too. That could be he's a serviceable backup quarterback right there for you guys. So, I mean, you had that covered. And like you said, you know, if that's the case, you wanted Michael Penix Jr. to be the next starter after Kirk Cousins, then you're really expecting that, even though, like you said, you signed that contract, that Kirk Cousins really isn't going to make it, and you're going to have to turn the page like next year.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he just gets injured and then just walks away or something like that. But that's a gamble you're taking. Like you said, I think many GMs that, you know, we've even talked to too, I think it was even Roderick, has said, listen, when you do the draft, you want to build for the future, but you need to build for now.
Right.
And this team just was – you know, right there at the top of the ranks just a season or two ago, and then still kind of was even in it last year despite some of the follies that it had, especially at the goal line here with, you know, Arthur Smith. But you allowed the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to get back in this division and take the division. You need to retool. You got Kirk Cousins here, you know, that you did before the offseason, before the draft started. you need to fix that defense. Like you said, you know what the fans wanted here, and you needed to do that and attack that to get better on that end, especially with Raheem Morris here on the defensive side of the ball. You want to improve that defense and get them to where they're borderline top 10 right now, but you want to get them better here and get that one key guy. That's the one thing that they're missing.
Yeah, and one other thing that I want to talk about the running backs, and Iggy mentioned it earlier in the pod, that he loves Bijan Robinson this year. He thinks that not only fantasy-wise, but even in the NFL, like he thinks that this guy's going to have a phenomenal year and just kind of take the league over by storm. Bijan Robinson is very young, just drafted him last year in 23, and he was electric when he was given the ball. Why he wasn't given the ball enough because Arthur Smith's play calling, I'll never understand. When you have a talent like that, and you have other guys that you've drafted with Drake London and Kyle Pitts, you should be distributing the football to all of your pinnacle players on offense. So, and Tyler Algier, he's another stud. Like I feel like because they drafted Bijan, now everyone looks at Tyler Algier as the little stepson. But he is a man that runs with tenacity, a guy that can run through you, and very tough. So I think they got themselves two great running backs that they need to utilize this year, both and everybody else around and on that offense.
Yeah, definitely. So on defensive side, again, like I said, pass rusher would have definitely helped this team out. But last year, again, they're doing pretty good. And I think that's why even Raheem Morris ended up winning his job. He had been, thought about for, head coaching jobs before. He was the interim coach, for a little bit too. And now he has won this job too, to run this defense, get it better. I really like, the back end too with Jesse Bates here. He's a great player on the tail end, in the backfield for him. And, one thing they did do last year, though, is they did hold it down on third downs and in the red zone. They were really holding it down on the red zone here. I expect more of that. And, to really help out with this defense, what really struggled for them is they were on the field a lot, and there was way too much for them because this offense was spit and sputter with having the question marks at the quarterback situation. So I think this offense, the way it's built now, will help the defense out in turn.
Yeah, the problem with that was the questionable play calling by Arthur Smith, and that led to a lot of the reasons why that offense, stagnated and ended up just, sputtering out and not converting on third down, not getting first downs early, and they would have to punt more. And honestly, there was a lot more turnovers that transpired with that offense. And you can blame Arthur Smith, and you can blame the quarterback at the time, but that was the other problem too. Is almost like they kept rotating quarterbacks every other week, so nobody could get in rhythm as a QB, and no one could fully understand, Arthur Smith's play calling. Not even the players. They were questioning it at the end of the year. They're like, dude, why are we doing this? Why are we running? Why are we throwing right now? When it's short yardage. So, I think going into this season, we'll have to wait and see exactly how much changes, because we have to expect that it's going to be creative and more high and more explosive, but we will see it this season for sure. And defensively, I just have to say that they still need to build that defense up, but the secondary to me is their bread and butter. The secondary, they've put together a really stout air defense for Atlanta. Last year they did it. This year they look to improve on it in terms of play and staying healthy. And then the pass rush. Atlanta fans have been complaining about the lack of pass rush for too long, many years. And they still haven't gotten the answer there. But they're hoping that some of these guys can develop and grow into their responsibilities there. It looks like they're converting to a 3-4 defense. So I hope that you see a guy like Lorenzo Carter kind of make his name known in Atlanta, become that pass rusher that he was once hoped to be in with the New York Giants. Maybe he can kind of turn it around in Atlanta and become that guy for them. But we'll have to wait and see for sure.
All right, so let's move on now to the Carolina Panthers. Joe, again, a really upsetting and really terrible season for, you know, Bryce Young and the Carolina Panthers last year. Really the laughing stock of the NFL, I would say, even too. Tickets were super cheap. You know, people were they couldn't give them away quick enough and things. And, yeah, it really flattened out, couldn't get it going, you know, lost their head coach right away. And like you can see, offense ranked 31st, defense 29th, just not a whole lot going on. So when you look forward to this season, you're like okay, Dave Canales, you know, can you fix this thing? You know, you can't get any worse than last year, all right? But you know what? At least they go and they draft a wide receiver in Xavier Legette in the first round. And then also they got Deontay Johnson here. So it's different than what they had last year. Last year you're looking at Adam Thielen and you're like, this is it. You know what I mean? This is your guy who's like, he's like on his borderline of retiring. He was even saying in the offseason, now, you know, this is a Super Bowl bound team that I'm on here now and things. And now he's shifted back down to now we're in the like the slot position, you know, back in there to where he's comfortable now, him at his age. So they definitely, you know, went at wide receiver here to get some more weapons for Bryce Young because he really didn't have a whole lot of options last season.
Well, this isn't the first year they've gone for receiver. You can go back to the past 3 years of them drafting guys like Terrace Marshall Jr., Jonathan Mingo, Adam Thielen they signed.
Even when they traded one away?
And then, oh, Robbie Anderson. Oh,
no,
sorry,
DJ Moore.
I'm sorry, DJ Moore.
Yeah.
That they should have kept him, right?
Right.
But I guess they didn't want to pay the money, you know? Mm-hmm. It is what it is. They moved on. But now they're in this constant flow of every single year looking to find the next receiver to replace him. And so far have been unlucky. They also signed Deontay Johnson this year from Pittsburgh, hoping that he can catch the ball, for one, and hold on to it, and then become that dynamic player underneath. Xavier Legette, to me, that they drafted this year in the first round, I really like the kid. I think he can develop to be a very, very good wide receiver for them. But the problem in college that he had in South Carolina was the fact that his route running wasn't as crisp. His route running wasn't as quick in and out of breaks. And that's what he's got to continue to work on at the next level. If he can do that, he's already got top-end speed. I mean, the dude is amazing, amazingly fast for his size. And he's built like a truck. Like, the guy is just, like, solid, dense type of body that he will literally run through you, and you swear to God you got hit with a baseball bat. So Legette is that kind of defining wide receiver that you would like to have in your arsenal, but he still needs to work on a few things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely. Again, looking at this offense, though, again, they need to turn this thing around because they need to score points, and that's one thing they couldn't do last year. You're hoping that Andy Dalton here in the veteran backup spot can help train Bryce Young and too, and try and eliminate some of the mistakes because you're talking about turnovers too, Joe, with the Atlanta Falcons. This team turned it over a lot too, and that really kept them out of these games and wasn't able to get them competitive. They weren't even competitive in a lot of these different games. But, you know, again, they attacked the offensive line too to try and beef that up a little bit because that was the one thing too. When you have Bryce Young, you know, at a smaller stature that he is too, and Frel, you were always worried about when he gets in the league, is he going to mm-hmm. be able to withstand hits? And he got hit a lot.
An awful lot. Absolutely. And they paid big, big, big money to a right guard by the name of Robert Hunt to hold that position down for them. And you saw them, they've brought in guys like Austin Corbett, a veteran, Damian Lewis from Seattle. They're hoping that he can lock down that left guard spot. And they've made improvements, but some of these guys, like Damian Lewis, hasn't been that great as an offensive lineman. The rookie from 22, Ikem Ekwonu, who I actually really liked coming out. I thought he was going to be one of the best left tackles, but he's letting me down. He's actually not doing his job and kind of letting some of these very fast speed rushers get right around him, get underneath him, and make a play on the quarterback. Bryce Young being rushed all over the football field. Bryce Young taking hits, like you mentioned. And I hope with the adjustment that they made this offseason that that will be enough to give Bryce Young more time, get him to be more comfortable back there. And that's the problem. I feel like last year, Bryce Young didn't get the opportunity enough to have a clean pocket, to be able to make the throw, to be able to have time, and instead of being under duress all the time. So, Panthers fans, you're hoping that the move that they made is going to be much better for this season and your trajectory there. And then running back, Chuba Hubbard, Jonathan Brooks, they just drafted. But guess what? Jonathan Brooks is still injured. So he's not available. Miles Sanders, they signed from Philly, a guy who's definitely capable of starting, which I'm kind of interested and intrigued on the fact that they have Chuba Hubbard right now listed as their starter. Definitely want to make Miles Sanders earn it. And then Jonathan Brooks, once he gets healthy, I feel like he's going to end up taking over that spot. There's a reason why they drafted him, you know, pretty high. So I like the running back rotation anyway. And as far as like a backup quarterback, Andy Dalton has found another team and is going to play backup veteran for Bryce Young.
Yeah, and I spoke about just their team and how bad they were on all phases. Defense was putrid. Multiple games where the opposition has scored 40-plus points, Joe. It was just terrible. So when you got an offense that can't really get it going and your defense is just as, you know, like a wet paper bag to where anybody can score on them, you know, worse in the red zone, worse on turnovers. It's just – like I said, they were just worse than the league at almost every phase of the game. So they needed to really get something going here, but they really didn't do a whole lot to attack. Again, they grabbed some veterans, which some veterans that are pretty decent, I guess, are all right. But, again, leftovers, though. You know, you got Jadeveon Clowney here, you know, Xavier Woods. It's just a lot of people's leftovers here. So, again, it looks like to me that the Carolina Panthers – they're going to be at the bottom of the division in the league again this year. Seems like they've kind of just sold on this season again, try and get some more picks and just start building next year.
Yeah, you know, new D coordinator, Jiro Evero, he's a new face, new thinking, a way of doing defense there. And like you mentioned up Dave Canales, who is an offensive-minded coach, is going to help kind of groom Bryce Young because his days in Tampa Bay – was able to help Baker Mayfield kind of further develop his game, you know, later in his career. So that's what they're hoping for in terms of the offense. And then defensively, new D coordinator, new thought process, because now they're going to a 3-4 defense, and they're looking to kind of have these big defensive linemen take up blocks. They're going to release their linebackers like a guy like Jadeveon Clowney, which this actually might be a better fit for Jadeveon. To be a guy who's standing up on the outside, just saying, go get that quarterback, much like he did in college. So maybe he could have a little bit of a resurgence in his career. We'll have to wait and see. But then you've got guys like who's been there forever, Shaq Thompson, you know, Josie Jewell, who I think is an excellent signing. Josie Jewell, former linebacker of the Denver Broncos. This guy is a madman. This guy can play ball. And I think they got themselves a stud there. So, you look at their secondary. Now, this is – you mentioned how weak they were, you know, statistically, and then even on the football field. They just never looked like they clicked. They never looked like the chemistry was there, and it looked a little weird. So they changed it up a little bit this year. You know, J.C. Horn looking to return yet again. Mm-hmm. This guy always getting hurt. Panthers fans are getting fed up with it. Like, dude, you got to stay healthy. You got to be out there. They bring in Xavier Woods, like you just mentioned, a veteran safety to kind of lock up the back end. Dane Jackson from Buffalo has been a backup. Now he's getting a legit shot to start. And then you also have Troy Hill, who's been another kind of, I don't want to say journeyman because he's only been on a couple different teams, but he's starting to get that kind of that stigma about him where he's a good player, a decent player, but it just seems like he never sticks anywhere. He's going to try to hold down that nickelback spot. So I would just say that their secondary to me is it hasn't been greatly improved, and it hasn't been, you know, a disappointment. So it's like I'm just kind of wait-and-see approach here with their secondary. That could be the downfall of this team if they don't rise to the occasion.
All right. We were talking about the NFC South right now, and we're going to move on to the next team, and that is the New Orleans Saints. Joe, again, Saints, they despite, you know, it sucks because, you know, I thought they could have did a whole lot better last year, and they still ended up at 9-8 and right there at the, you know, neck and neck with the division, but just fell short. And that was even despite Carmichael in this offense. Like I said,
God
it seemed
awful.
Not really click, and it seemed that, you know, Derek Carr and receivers not on the same page, a lot of different issues. You know, injuries on top of it too. And again, here we are now with Derek Carr with yet another offensive coordinator in Clint Kubiak. So if you go through Derek Carr's career, it's funny to try and count how many different offenses he's kind of had to learn and go through. Mm-hmm. It's got to be astronomical. I mean, he might just have to be in the Hall of Fame for that. We're dealing with so many different, you know, Tom Brady is, you know, beating every single team or 32 teams or whatever and things like that. You got to look at, you know, Derek Carr and be like, oh, he's played in, you know, 64 different offenses. You know?
That's right. He's learned the most offenses any human being has ever learned. And kudos to him. He's got a photographic memory to do mm-hmm. so. So amazing football mind, and he is a really good quarterback. People kind of give him crap all the time saying he's not that good. But I'll tell you right now, that whole debacle that was Pete Carmichael last year, none of the players were happy. Mm-hmm. Everybody complained either about not being involved enough or the offensive play calling in certain game situations. It wasn't all terrible, but most of it was. So, and that's why you saw the Saints move on from him. And they bring in Dennis Allen, still there, everybody. It, to me, I'm kind of surprised that he's still the head coach. But now they're saying they're giving him the benefit of the doubt, and they're saying, okay, bring in a different offensive coordinator. Let's see if this is the issue. Or is it you? They bring in Clint Kubiak, who is formerly of the 49ers, a guy that you have to anticipate or expect is going to bring that like-minded 49er offense now to the New Orleans Saints there to with Derek Carr. So I think this could be a very good thing for the Saints because you have Alvin Kamara, who's been very upset, even in the offseason, and kind of misleading tweets that he's putting out, and it's almost sounding like he's just unhappy being a Saint at this point. We'll have to wait and to see if it just smooths over by week one, but again, this could be a great offense for Alvin Kamara. This could be a great offense for guys like Chris Olave, to the deep threat that they have. Rashid Shaheed, I mean, this guy blew up last year. Now everybody knows his name. Now people are going to really pay attention to him. But someone that they don't know is A.T. Perry. A.T. Perry, to me, last year in his rotation on offense, made some pretty big plays, made some pretty big catches to get first downs and move the chains and whatnot, and now he's going to get an opportunity to start. And I think that with their receivers that they have in their starting lineup, and then you look at the draft pick they got in Bub Means looks like a very good receiver that can develop to be a starter down the road, but maybe he gets a little bit, a few more reps this season as a rookie. I really like what they have now. I feel like this is the offense that they can utilize using Alvin Kamara, using Jamal Williams, both of them, and they're going to be able to run this kind of like Niner-esque offense, and I feel like everybody's going to be able to touch the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, too, is they kind of were overlooked again, and I don't know why it is, you know,
yeah.
It's because they're the Saints or whatnot, and despite, you know, how, you know, inept they were at times, mm-hmm. You know, they were getting it going. I mean, they were still, you know, top 10 in the league in offense, plus even defense, and you know, Dennis Allen's known for his defense to keep them in games, mm-hmm. and they were getting it. They were still doing it, and they were like third, I think, in fourth downs and like second in third downs. So they're keeping the teams, you know, getting them off the field and getting that offense back on. And if they didn't have those issues, they would have did a lot better. And like I said, Derek Carr getting dogged nonstop, especially on the Madden. I mean, what, they just ranked him like a 71 or something like that?
Dude's low again.
Dude's dude's line last year, right? Let's just look at this quick here. He's 68.4% accuracy, completion percentage.
Pretty good.
3,800 yards, and now is even him, you know, banged up a little bit, and where the and the offense wasn't there, you know. So 25 touchdowns and 8 INTs. So I mean, the dude was balling,
under a terrible offensive mind, right? That is Pete Carmichael. And let's point out something else that didn't go right their way. The offensive line didn't.
Yes,
like Trevor Penning, mm-hmm. who they drafted in 22. The guy's been terrible. Like it's funny because when we go back to that draft and watching all the information, watching film on this guy looked like the next great tackle. Like this guy, there was no flaws in his game, you know, very strong, very imposing. And you look, he played with a nasty streak that, which a lot of coaches love, you know, he finishes the block even after the whistle. So old school mentality, right? Trevor Penning has been nothing but a disappointment. And they're still hoping that maybe this year he'll wake up and realize his full potential. But he was one of the issues, one of a couple, because even on the other side at left tackle, there was no help. There was it seemed like both tackles just weren't even – they just couldn't block anybody. And they were like revolving doors of letting pressure in constantly on Derek Carr and the running back. So – what they did was they went all out. They're like, you know what? We're taking an offensive lineman in the first round. Mm-hmm. We are not playing games anymore. Trevor Penning didn't work out, but let's hopefully he can turn the corner and do something this year. But Talese Fuaga, one of the best tackles coming out. This dude, I'm not crazy about where they have him right now. They have him as a left tackle, but maybe he can develop to be that left side. He's always played right, so that's kind of what's concerning me. Is like when you just automatically switch to the other side, people say, oh, well, you're just switching to the other side. How hard can it be? It's almost like writing your whole life left-handed and then all of a sudden saying, well, you're 40 years old. Guess what? You can't write with your left anymore. Now you have to write with your right. And it's like, next to impossible, you know. So that's kind of what it's like for linemen to go from one side to the other. And for Talese Fuaga, it's going to be a challenge to him. Now, Fuaga has been in interviews and says, like, oh, it's no big deal. He goes, I played a couple games where I had to switch over to the other side. And he goes, I think I'll be fine. But we'll see, because you're at a whole other level now in the NFL. It's not college anymore. So I think that's going to be interesting to watch. And then Ryan Ramczyk, right now he's hurt. He's not going to be available. I don't know if he's going to be back by week one or whatnot. Obviously the expectancy is he is, but if he's not, and you've got Trevor Penning now as your right tackle, you better hope something clicked in the guy to where he's going to play at a higher level.
Right. And you know, here we go. Like you said, you talked about this offense, these wide receivers are very sneaky again. A lot of them, like you said, if you looked at either one of these guys, you're like, yo, these guys are on the come up. It could be either one. Like you said, people aren't talking about A.T. Perry, and I know it is only, the practice and, you know, the offseason and everything looks good in practice, but he's connecting on some nice ones right now in practice.
Chemistry, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And these guys are looking good. And like you said, look at the depth even that they have, where some of these veterans can make the roster here and follow up with some of these guys that have been starters for teams a while back. And so they did focus on offensive line. That's one thing to do, keep Derek Carr from getting hit and keep him on the field. Because, again, they do go out and draft Spencer Rattler. I'm not really big on Spencer Rattler, but I think it was a good gamble for them. So who knows? I know Our Lads has him penciled in the third spot. We'll see if he can develop a little quicker along and see if we potentially see him at one point this season if things start to go poorly. But Alvin Kamara, like you said, there's been some drama back and forth with this guy too, nonstop. To where he's actually getting longer in the tooth now too. So they can even, I think, do fairly well without him. Yes, he is a main focal point when he is in there, and he does really well. But again, you see how running backs, you know, as they're aging, you know, do start to taper off. It is a fact. You know, people don't always get better, you know, with age. You know, Adrian Peterson was a phenomenal running back, and that was like an anomaly. Mm-hmm. But they do have Jamal Williams behind there too. So I mean, they got some stuff in the backfield. And the way I think this offense can easily work is with all these wide receivers.
Yeah, what's the deal with the whole hype on Spencer Rattler as far as the Saints drafting him? And everybody, there was a lot of Saints fans and Saints podcasts even that were saying, oh, we got Rattler. He's going to end up being our starter.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
No. No, mm-hmm. just because you drafted a quarterback, and by the way, you drafted him in the fifth round. It's not like you drafted him in the first where you're like, okay, now we got questions. But like, at least the one thing I'll say about the Saints is that they are preparing for the future. When Derek Carr does move on, or when the Saints move on from Derek Carr, they've drafted Jake Haener in the fourth round in 23, and now they've drafted Spencer Rattler in the fifth round of 24. So they are preparing of hopefully one of these guys developing into a starter for the franchise down in the future. But let's stop the nonsense right now and talking about how Rattler is going to push Derek Carr. Sorry, that's just ludicrous.
Right,
doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. And then I talked about the defense a bit too, and I think they're a little underlooked too. As too, a lot of people forget about this defense and how they have been playing. And Cameron Jordan even too at a longer age, you know, getting up there, still has been fairly productive. You know, despite you know being up there and probably in his tail end of his career. But a few notable names here for me, Carl Granderson, I think has been a really good DN for them too. Has really made some great moves. They do sign Chase Young in a free agency move, which I think is nice too because he fits well here with this, not asked to do a whole lot. He was able to step up for the 49ers in the playoffs here for them last season to make that push. And the signing of Willie Gay. I think when we were talking about underrated players, I think, and some key signings, this was my guy. Mm-hmm. You know, Willie Gay right there, kind of underlooked, you know, player for the Kansas City Chiefs, still made some great plays, but when you have, you know, Chris Jones and things like that out there, you know, and some good talent on that team, a lot of people don't know this guy, you know, in a household name, and I think you will. You'll see him make some plays on this defense.
Yeah, you had him paired up with Nick Bolton, and you hear about Chris Jones, and you hear about the big names. Well, that's where the money ended up going to, Chris Jones, and they couldn't afford to sign Willie Gay. But what's interesting is the fact that he didn't sign for a lot of money. And he was out in free agency for quite some time, longer than I thought. I thought for sure that, like, maybe my Raiders would sign him because we were in need of a linebacker that could go sideline to sideline. And, again, I've seen this guy every single year, two times a year that the Raiders faced him. And I was like, dude, this guy is, like, all over the place. And then he became a free agent. I'm like, dude, come on. Steal from the rich. Like, go get this guy, and they just didn't.
So, yeah, how many times you see rivals go and take the guy because they see him that often.
Yeah, so and then now you've got the Saints that end up happening to get a guy like Willie Gay, who I think is going to work wonders in this defense of theirs, and they made a lot of changes too. Now, we don't forget that they still had veterans, Pete Werner and DeMario Davis, who we talk about the fountain of youth. DeMario Davis is still playing. He's mid-30. And he's still playing like he's 22. Like, I don't know what he does in the offseason. I don't know if he's a vampire. I don't know if he just drinks holy water. Like, I don't know what it is. But he is amazing for his age, a player of his age, and still being able to play at a high level like he does. It's amazing. So now you bring in Willie Gay. That linebacking core now, I'm sorry, you could argue that it's one of the best linebacking cores now in the game. And then you look, and then like you mentioned, Carl Granderson.
Mm-hmm.
Carl Granderson does not get enough hype. This dude he's better than Cameron Jordan, and it's not close. And I understand where some people might say, oh, but yeah, because, you know, Cameron Jordan's at the end of his career. But no, I'm talking about even in Jordan's prime. Carl Granderson is electric. That dude is just a phenom. And then when they brought in guys like Nathan Shepard from the Jets to play D-tackle, Kalen Saunders from the Chiefs, who I think is an underrated D-tackle, you're looking at they've picked certain pieces to enter in this defense, and they're going to take another notch. They're stepping up again. So defensively, they're getting stronger. You have the return of Marshon Lattimore, who let's hope that he stays healthy this year to see him on the field more often. Paulson Adebo, who's made a name for himself with the Saints. And then I'm not crazy about it, but Tyrann Mathieu's still there. Like I thought that they should now they drafted Kool-Aid McKinstry, who could have the ability to go to safety, but obviously they have insurance policy there, right? Like they have him in case they need him to start. Maybe he even wins a job. Who knows by week one? But I really liked him coming out of the draft, and I think that he could carve out a nice spot, especially in the rotation. I think this team is on the rise this year. I think they got better on defense. They got better on offense, not just because of personnel, but also because I feel like the coaching staff is better.
I agree. I think they definitely can make a push. All right, next and finally now with the NFC South, we have the division leader from last year, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers here. Lock in Baker Mayfield after a stellar season here, making like a comeback in his career. He was kind of at his last stop, you would think, here. Even though he did perform fairly well for Los Angeles, it was kind of funny. I think that one comeback game where he did get kind of thrown in there, if he did not play as well as he did, I mean, it's lights out. But, you know, for not knowing the playbook very long and playing that kind of backyard football, it ended up playing to his strengths, and he performed very well enough to get that starting job here for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And where we said that the Saints here kind of reeling at times when they were missing on offense, he kind of stepped up here and got this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team where I thought they were going to kind of take a little step back, you know, after missing Tom Brady and things like that, just dialed it back in and made a push and made the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting, too, is, like, I don't know if you noticed this, Jim, but, like, the D coordinator isn't just one guy.
We noticed that.
It's Casey Rogers and Larry Foote as DC. When we all know that Todd Bowles is the DC. Bowles, that's his bread and butter. That's what he's doing. You know, maybe we give them a little credibility for the defense, and that's why they list them as D coordinators.
There's a few teams that did that last year. I think the Patriots did too when Belichick was there. He named like two different defensive coordinators. And, they're sharing roles.
Here's an olive branch.
Yes,
he gets to be on the staff.
Yeah, right.
New offensive coordinator though, Liam Cohen. So I wonder how much different it's going to be for this offense with Baker Mayfield, who had tremendous success. You know, and now you have a different offensive coordinator. Usually has a little different view on how to run an offense. So will that lead to maybe Baker Mayfield, you know, not playing as well or playing the same? You know what I mean? So we'll have to wait and see on that. But what one thing that we've noticed is that the age of the receiving corps is rising. Mike Evans agrees to a new deal.
Mm-hmm.
Originally with the team since 2014, got drafted by them. Chris Godwin, another guy who's aging, getting older. They managed to add some youth here with Jalen McMillan, draft pick in the third round, who they're hoping is right now pegged as the starter. But there's other guys that are kind of vying for the job. And sure enough, Jim, I know you hate this guy, but Sterling Shepard is on the roster, has found a home, and I'm curious to see just how much of a player or how much time he's going to get on the football field. Having been behind Chris Godwin, we all know Godwin doesn't stay the healthiest.
Right.
So they got themselves an insurance policy at least there, and that's going to be interesting because if they do, in fact, with Mike Evans now getting older, he was banged up here and there last year. Chris Godwin missed some significant time last year. Imagine both those guys being injured, and now your starting lineup is guys like Jalen McMillan, Sterling Shepard, and one of the other younger guys like Rakim Jarrett, Trey Palmer. That's a little concerning to me.
Yeah, I mean that you kind of hit the nail on the head here. Mike Evans, again, he was contemplating, you know, walking away, you know, whatever, get on another contract. He's 31. They did do a deal with him that was very friendly, like basically a 2-year extension, then the rest are void years.
Mm-hmm.
So just so in case they make that push again, you know, you've got the lightning in the bottle that is Baker Mayfield. And then after that, if this whole team implodes, he's out of it, and you're probably looking at Todd Bowles being out of it as well. Like you said, the wide receivers thing, they didn't want to tackle that right now. They still had the you know, veterans there. They do go and draft that you know, rookie, but they did focus on center because that is the one major thing with Jensen no longer being there. That's what they kind of focused on and got Graham Barton, you know, in the first round. So wide receivers, I think they're good for now. And this is what this team is basically saying. We're going in, putting all of our chips right now in with what Baker Mayfield is right here for 2 years. This is a 2-year deal on everybody, I'd say, at least, you know, these older guys on, you know, the head coach too, and Baker Mayfield. We did really well last year. It looked really well. We played well. We do played well enough to take this division, and they did fairly well in the playoffs too. I mean, they weren't getting, you know, the crap kicked out of them. So I thought they were competitive. I think just, they're just kind of seeing what this can kind of take them. This is like their new thing. They weren't sure if they were going to go right to a rebuild after Tom Brady. It's kind of like a retool, see what happens, and then we'll rebuild after that.
Yeah, and they've seen the results already. Like they won the division. They did what they did. They did what they could do. But now that they know what direction they're headed, I was hoping, and that was a major concern, is that interior line, that they were going to address that heavily. Now, they did draft Graham Barton, you're correct.
Yes.
A.K.A. baby hands.
Yes.
And short arms. So I'm curious to see how that works out. But Ben Bredesen they signed from the Giants.
You want to talk about a guy I hate? They got two guys that I hate.
Hold on. I just have to say, well, Ben Bredesen, you can't hate him for sucking. Like, the guy's just not that good. I'm curious why Tampa would go out and address that need with Ben and not someone else. Not even like, okay, you drafted Graham Barton in the first round. What about the second round? Drafting a guard. You know, what about that? Really securing that offensive line. Because that to me is Graham Barton, I still have questions on. I'm waiting to see if they get answered this in the regular season. Ben Bredesen, we know what he is. He's not very good. So now that you have two guys that are in question coming into this year, they're not like seen as guys that, okay, 100%, you guys hit it out of the park. You know, you got your answers. So I still worry about this offensive line. Now, obviously, you don't have to worry about Tristan Wirfs. You don't have to worry about Cody Mauch or Luke Getteke and all that. Mm-hmm. You're okay there. But those two guys, if they don't pan out, if they don't improve, then we might be talking about this whole scenario all over again next season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely, Joe. I mean, that's the thing, too, is because you got Baker Mayfield now. Yes, good thing for him. He can get out of the pocket because that's one thing you did notice that they did with him when they did design the offense. And like you said, they got all the offensive coordinator. So you hope that they keep in mind bootlegs, get him out of the pocket because, again, he's shorter and doesn't have that vision. And this is the issue that he had when he was with Cleveland, too. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Stefanski seemed to kind of dial that in a little bit, but still, you know, Baker Mayfield a little reckless with the arm, making a few too many mistakes, and his wide receivers kept getting injured on top of it. Get him out in space, make some plays with his legs, and that's where he's able to kind of excel in some of these kind of running back, you know, options and things like that too, and hand the ball off. And look at the running back situation. It's different too a bit. You know what I mean? Except for Rashad White here, who looks fairly good too. But they do go and draft Bucky Irving in the draft too, and they bring in Chase Edmonds here, who's, you know, he's been banged up too before, you know, and a bit of a veteran. But this team has kind of ran off of this type of deal too. It's almost like running back by committee for a while.
Yeah, I mean, it was Rashad White last year for the most part, and it looks like it's going to be that again. Mm-hmm. I've never been a huge fan of Rashad White. I think he's decent. It's not like he just can't handle the job there, but I just haven't been, you know, impressed at all. Like, to me, he seems like he's just like an average running back and doesn't have any, like, big-time years for the Buccaneers. He's kind of like just like a, oh, well, you know, you're a utility player in the lineup, you know, like, we use you when we feel like, and then, you know, the big plays are made with Baker Mayfield and throwing the football. So now that they've added Bucky Irving this year, Bucky Irving is a much different running back than people might, you know, be wondering about here, because he's not your typical run between the tackles type of guy. This is the guy that you want to give the ball out in the open, because He is like a joystick on the football field. Very hard to tackle in the open. Has a very strong base. He's hard to trip. But, man, is he quick and elusive. Guy makes a lot of people miss in college. He's going to look to do the same in the NFL level. And he's just quick. He's fast. And I kind of wonder, I'm hoping anyways, that they utilize maybe two, maybe three backs. But I want to see Bucky Irving in like those – Even in like second down plays, third down plays, where you just kind of just throw zip it out to him real quick and watch him work. Like I just think that this kid can be something of a high value with as a receiver out of the backfield. And you mentioned Chase Edmonds. Chase Edmonds has been a veteran guy, but when he's healthy, he's actually a pretty good player. Like mm-hmm. he's actually started mm-hmm. for Arizona Cardinals at one point in time, and I think he could do it again. I'm curious to see if this is actually a is it in fact a running back by committee, or is it with the new additions now, is this more like they want to see who wants to win the job? Is this open for competition here in training camp? That'll be curious to see. We all know Mayfield's going to start. Cade Otton, we got to bring him up.
Yeah,
not enough people bring this guy up. This guy has been a very good tight end for Tampa Bay, but isn't really spoken about, but he's solid. He can block. He can receive. So I like that. I like that the fact that they still have Cade Otton, and I think he's going to pay huge dividends, obviously, for Baker Mayfield. That's one of his favorite targets, Mike Evans, and then I feel like Cade Otton's like right there behind him. So it'll be curious to see how this offense is ran with Tampa Bay this year.
Yeah, yeah, and looking at the defense, you know, one thing that, you know, Todd Bowles has to be, you know, kind of taking, you know, the credit for, you know, and things, and not doing too bad and holding points off that kept them in games, but again, the yardage is killing them. But a lot of different faces, you know, on this team, and guys that are gone. I mean, you don't have Shaquille Barrett anymore, you don't have Devin White anymore, you don't have Neal anymore, so some of these guys are gone. You know, so
yeah, Barrett retired.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm surprised. I thought he still had some gas in the tank.
I thought he would still make another run of it the way this team was. You know, I mean, why not? You know, at least one more
shot.
Or to
another team. He was a free agent.
Yeah, yeah. Why not? But, again, Lavonte David, the veteran, that was one of my – you want to talk about how long ago we did that IDP? Lavonte David was my other linebacker. I had Lavonte David, a young Lavonte David, and KJ Wright as my linebackers. Mm-hmm. It was pretty awesome at the time. But yeah, here we go. A different look on the defense here, but you still have your veterans here in Jamel Dean and Antoine Winfield. Dean really kind of came into it. He kind of was like trial under fire. This guy came in young and then kind of put to the test. People pick on him a little bit, but has really come into his own, and now he's there at that starting spot at the corner position. But they do bring in Bryce Hall from the Jets, so too. I thought he would have been a nice move for the Jets here too, but when he's on the team. But you know, they did get more depth on their side as well. So now he's over here with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But you know, veteran Vita Vey, you know, looked really good last year too. You know, trying to stay healthy. And KJ Britt still a big contender here on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, what's the biggest playmaker for them on the D-line is Vita Vea. Mm-hmm. That guy is just unblockable. He is a beast. I've seen him take on double teams and just kind of steamroll through them to get to the quarterback. And he's supposed to be a nose tackle.
Right.
He's not supposed to be the guy that creates the pressure, but that dude can play. I look for him to continue the success along with Kalijah Kancey, who they drafted in 23. That dude's been a menace. So those two guys side by side, they're creating problems every week. Other than that, when you look at their DNs, like I'm not impressed. I'm not excited about like Logan Hall. I don't think he's done enough to show anything. Joe Tryon is in question this year. Joe Tryon, they drafted in 21 in the first round, mind you, in hopes of him becoming another stud pass rusher, and I just haven't seen it. Like, I've seen some decent plays from him, but I haven't seen any consistency of creating pressure and getting after the quarterback and whatnot. The linebacking core, I'll say, has improved by subtracting Devin White. And some Buccaneers fans might not like that idea, but it is, in fact, true. The guy was limited in the capacity, couldn't cover nobody. The guy, what's interesting is that he ran a 4.440. Is fast. It's not like he's slow. But for some reason, the guy can't cover nobody. Can't cover tight ends, can't cover, you know, slot receivers. He just can't cover. The only thing he's been really good at is stopping the run, and that's it. He's a one-trick pony at linebacker. Good, I would say good riddance, Tampa Bay, and you've improved your linebacking core because now you're running this 3-4 scheme. You got Lavonte David, veteran, is playing at a high level, even at his age. KJ Britt, who's going to add some tenacity to your linebacking core. And then everybody overlooks this guy, Yaya Diaby. Mm-hmm. This dude is going to be an absolute hurricane off the edge.
Yeah.
He's going to be insane. I think he's going to get double-digit sacks. I really do.
I think he's creeping on there, too, as well. Again, like you said, if you want to talk about underrated players or people that, you know, kind of unspoken, people don't really notice, I was going to say the same thing. Yaya Diaby, 7.5 sacks last year and to creep on double digits this year, especially with Shaq Barrett going.
Yeah, even with the – now you look at the formation change.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, Yaya Diaby was getting in the backfield against one-on-one against the tackle. Now this guy is going to be releasing – they're going to be releasing the hounds off the edge, where sometimes you just got to flat out beat the dude around the corner, and then other times you might get a free rush where this dude is going to light it up. So I can't wait for that. And then we look at their secondary real quick. A lot of same faces, but a couple new ones. Jordan Whitehead locking up the safety. Antoine Winfield Jr., can this dude just stay healthy for once?
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, what gives? What are you not doing that you're supposed to be doing in the offseason to prepare your body for war, to prepare your body for the long season? I mean, this dude keeps getting these nicks and missing a little bit of time here, sometimes more time. You're driving fans crazy here. Stay healthy this year and be the baller that you are. Jamal Dean, Zion McCallum, to me, I'm curious to see, like, there's been raving reports about this kid coming on, starting on as the left corner. And then you got Jamal Dean, obviously, like I mentioned. And then Christian Eason, nickel corner. I'm curious to see what he can bring to the table because he's another young guy who right now is penciled in as a starter. And I still think that maybe a guy like Tyke Smith could kind of push him a little bit in training camp, but we'll have to wait and see. But I just got to say, Tampa has a nice team, but I don't think it's any better than last year's team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you might have some trade-offs, right? Like yeah. We just mentioned, like, defensively, yeah. I think defensively they got better. But offensively, did they really get better? We have to wait and see.
Kind of stayed the same in a sense, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how this division all shakes out. And by shaking out, me and Jim right now are going to give you guys our early prediction on just exactly how this division we think is going
to
go.
Let the other kids win sometimes. You don't have to win
We'll see. I don't know. I don't know if I can get this one this year, but we'll see. Go ahead. You do your picks here first. Let's see what you got, Joe. Who do you think is going to take it? And we'll go right one by one.
I think I'm going to go. I think I'm going to go Saints.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to go Atlanta, Tampa, and Carolina. That's what I'm going to do.
All right. Yeah, I can see that totally there. Because, again, the thing is, when you're looking at it, the Atlanta Falcons have gotten better. So they are like the wild card in this one. You know what I mean? They're the ones that are like, all right, they got Kirk Cousins.
Atlanta could very easily win the division.
Right. And no matter what we talked about on our other show, the Football on the No Show, every Wednesday night at 9 p.m., we did Madden re-ratings, and again, they gave him a top 10 rating in like 80-something here. They love Kirk Cousins, but then they dogged him in block shedding or something, breaking sack of 41. Somebody had noted up in the comments, too, like maybe that's a tip of the hat to his age or something like that, but really dogged him in the rest of the ratings, so not rating so high. But I think he is a difference maker in what they really needed, because they went from not knowing what the quarterback is to now having a true quarterback, you know, that can play. That is a key factor here. Like you said, I'm really liking it. I picked the Saints last year, and then I think I went in with the Bucs, and then the Falcons and the Panthers. I'm going to continue again. I'm going to go Saints, Bucs, Falcons, and then Panthers, just because I'm not sure again. But let me tell you, the wild card is the Falcons. And, you know, obviously I'm not a Nostradamus on that one, too. A lot of people jump on that one, too. So, but there you go. There you go. That's the NFC South preview.
That's right.
Joe, we have one more division left over next week, and that will be the NFC West. Super exciting. And then the NFL season will be getting kicked off here. We're already watching some
preseason games
going on. We had already done our NFC North last week. And it's already crumbled even too. We're talking about Sam Darnold and J.J. McCarthy. J.J. McCarthy out and has to get he has the meniscus tear and has to get surgery. But we did say in the show, and you guys can look back and check the video again, that Joe had brought up the fact that Sam Darnold has always been the starter, will be the starter, and now it's just confirmed even more that he is going to be starting for these guys. So it is sad though with J.J. McCarthy again, you know, not being able to get the opportunity here because of the injury, but.
He wasn't going to win the job either.
Quick recovery. How about that when he was talking about your Raiders defense, huh, Joe? Dogging the defense?
Yeah.
Very vanilla. Vanilla ice, baby.
But Raiders defense very vanilla?
Yes.
Yeah, not when Antonio Pierce took over. No. I mean, that changed. Ended up being a top 10 defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, again, it's just him not knowing, like you said, when his IQ, when he was, you know, asked in interviews, stuff like that, to look at different defensive schemes, and he was able to pick a bunch out, just, you know, the knowledge that he has. But, you know, maybe he's got a little too much swagger there for J.J. McCarthy. But we will be talking about the NFC West next week. Again, the NFL is getting started. We're super excited that all this preseason stuff's getting going. We're excited to talk regular football during the season, Joe. Kickoff rules already in play in the preseason, making a debacle of things all over the map. People not knowing what the rules are. Still kind of getting the plays, kind of wrong or whatever, letting it bounce before it does, and all this other nonsense and penalties. Will it iron itself out by the time the season starts?
It will iron itself out. I mean, but I'm still not a fan of this current kickoff, you know, plan. I don't like it. I think the NFL loves it. The NFL's like, oh, well, it's a new way of doing it, and it's going to add a little bit more excitement. How? Like, dude, the excitement was your traditional kickoff. You kick it off to the other side of the field, and they make the big-time returns. Like, now you're starting to orchestrate it too much. You're going to be like, oh, well, you got to kick between the 20 and the goal line. And if you don't do that, this happens. And if you do that, they can return it. But you can't. No one can block or pursue until the guy catches it. Mm-hmm. And it's like all these extra steps they just implemented.
And if they didn't kick within the landing zone and if it
gets kicked through the end zone, it's at the 30. But you know, if they down it in the end zone, then it's at the 25. Like you're
it's
making
lead
it
to more
too
conversations
much.
Too with the with
it's
the
too much.
Yeah,
and now you're starting to have special teams coordinators trying to play with these rules and try to figure out an advantage that they could gain before week one happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other thing too is like I just want to tell everybody out there, the nation, that when you're watching your preseason games, it's not about if you win or lose. Because I was watching games with friends of mine, and some of them acted like, oh, my God, we won. We pulled it off. And it's just like, it doesn't matter. Like, it literally doesn't matter if you win or lose. It's all about evaluating your team.
Oh, my God. Who the hell cares?
Who's going to make the roster to give you a bump in the season?
Yeah, the Giants won the Super Bowl, they were 0-4 in the preseason. So
not to mention people overblow the execution, you will, for each team. Like, oh well, they didn't look so good. Okay, but I mean, you're basically just playing talent versus talent. You're not playing scheme. There's nobody game planning for these games, so. You're not going to see this happen in the NFL. Mm-hmm. It's just one of these things where, like, you know, settle down.
Yeah.
Relax.
Yep. Relax. That's right, everybody. So thank you so much for joining us this week. Like we said, we thank you so much for Iggy Gilbert joining us, talking some fantasy football. Fantasy football season is getting underway. Hopefully you haven't done your draft yet, like
no,
he said. So make sure you guys, if you missed it, go back and watch the live video, definitely. But then also we'll be cutting up the videos and stuff like that so you can watch the isolated video itself down, you know, in the future. Joe, let everybody know where they can find those videos.
Blitz Nation, this is your PSA for football. Make sure you tune in here every single week. We are here every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. And we want to also tell you guys, we are brought to you by Grumblings Media. That's right. Head over to YouTube right now. Hit that subscribe button. Hit the like button. Share it to all your family and friends. And you can check us out on Rumble.com as well. Head over to the website, grumblingsmedia.com. Make sure you check out all the political entertainment, the sports podcasts that are out there. And take us along on the go and be part of the nation. Anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora. We thank you guys so much. We thank Iggy for joining us today. It was a blast. We talked some fantasy football. We got some fantasy football pointers. And if you need anything more than that in terms of betting, Iggy's your guy. The guy can handle it. He knows what he's doing. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you guys next week. And just remember, this is the best live, interactive NFL talk show there is. We want to prove it to you guys. We need more people to comment. We love it that you're viewing us. We love it that you like the show. But we want you to comment. Let you know you're here. If you got a question, say it. Doesn't matter. We will react to it. Let's do this.
That's right, Blitz family. Let's do this. Until next time.